Epiphanies is four films that are, I put together, and they originally were part of an experimental opera. There would be a film, a sung portion of film, a sung portion of film, and a sung portion of film. Four films, three short operas, and it was performed at Yale. And the four films, the way they were conceived, Paul Demaray, who also did the music for No Idea for me, he was a professor at UCLA at the time, he's retired now, he did the music, and what he we selected four books. The first one was a book in bestiary. The second book was a book on dance notations. And the third film was on microbiology in 1927, photos from France. And the fourth film was in theater machinery of the 18th century, I believe, a book of woodcuts of theatrical machinery. Paul then took each book and wrote a piece of music about 3 minutes long, 3 to 4 minutes long, and the only stipulation was the music not be narrative, nor the events in the book be narrative. In fact, the books were chosen because they weren't narrative. Then I took the music and the book and made a film. The first film, The Book of Bestiary, we got some excellent prints from the Huntington Library in Pasadena. It was the most popular book. It was published in 1504, at least this edition was. It was the most popular book in medieval time, next to the Bible, or in that period. And it, taking the books, I did put a unicorn in from a tapestry at the end, but most everything is from the Book of Bestiary. The second film are dance notations. Each, the vertical line, there's a head, there's arms, there's legs. So each notation as animated on the screen is a particular step or movement in ballet, since there is no way to record ballet, and so that you couldn't do it over unless you came up with this dance notation system, so that a ballet could be done again and again. Now, of course, they have tape or film. And also some form of dance notation. The third film was a base we called War. Of course, the first film was called Bestiary. The second would be called Dance. The third was War, because the microphotography at the beginning, black and white, some of the first done in the 20s, reminded me of war, whatever. And so I went to Goya, Grotz, painters, books on German, Durer, and used images, Kathy Kollwitz, from war and the ravages of war in that, because the music was very warlike. The last film was The Theatrical Machinery. I tried something. Technically, it didn't work. I should have used backlight. But I tried using photos. Well, photos, then I made them stats. And I tried to move black lines through black lines, which I did, but it really didn't matter. Otherwise, it was the whole thing is a multiple exposure is to use your light through dark. I tried the opposite, and it didn't work. Anyway, the obviously, four films are experimental, and they include what I mentioned, multipass, which is shooting the same film, same image more than once with different colors and different sizes. There was one spot, I think it was on War, where one piece of film I shot, I think, 37 times. One segment of the film was shot over 37 times. Colored circles. The film was previewed and shown at Yale Drama School. They brought up a New York director. I didn't see it, Paul did, but he described it as the people came out in the opening And the libretto was done by a person from Australia. And they were like a cocktails party. The singers, male and female, were standing around in evening dress, drinking cocktails. And there was a big block in the center of the stage, a big white block. And this would be later the screen. At some point after the audience was seated, they all stopped, turned, and looked at this block. And then the lights went down and the film was shown, the bestiary. Then the lights came back up, the film stopped, lights came up. And then they all broke into a song. I think the song, the music was Chemical Formulas. Oh, the last film, The Theatrical Machinery, was intended to be shown on scrims. These are semi-transparent screens that you can see through, and they'd be larger. So it was, all those were designed to be caught up. Maybe a part of the screen would show here and there, and objects would appear out of the dark. And also it would be done in depth, so you would keep going back with the images, not a flat two-dimensional. Unfortunately, it wasn't staged that way. And what the New York director did, because he was a director, he took why the film was being shown on this block. There's a little space below it. The block was raised up. So he had two female dancers and a male dancer dressed in skin-tight leotards that were nude leotards. In other words, they looked nude, dancing, writhing below the screen. They didn't interrupt the screen, but they were writhing in various threesomes of an erotic nature. The film, apparently not many people saw it. Everybody was craning to see the goings-on. This is one thing a filmmaker always has to contend with, external events, environmental happenings around their work. I think that's about it. On Epiphanies, again, the films were put together as one film, cut together, and I did have a chance. They wanted to show this film plus others, experimental films in the late 60s on a network broadcast. I didn't show it because I wanted to get paid. They wanted to do it for free. They showed other people's films who went on to become very famous as part of the experimental movement, and I didn't because I did not want them to show it without some sort of compensation for the artist. But you make your choices. The red-green was the world's longest dissolve. It's a 5-minute dissolve from the color red to the color green. The sound is my voice saying red-green. And I said red on a 28-frame cycle and green on a 27-frame cycle. So the words would slip. Red would overtake green and then come around as I said it every 28 frames times 28. And it, the film, when it was screened in San Francisco, an experimental film festival, the people in it were yelling at some point, watching it a few minutes, part of the audience took on red, part took on green, and they were having a cross yellowing contest, red, green, red, green. Then somebody yelled out purple and broke the place up, and it became a very audience interactive work. The film won a big award in Poland, the political content of red going into green, and also did very well in Sweden. I really don't know why. Next film is First Will and Testament. It was a poetry film. My poems I put in, and I illustrated the poems. I've started several films and just haven't shot them. I'd like to do more with the idea of combining poetry and animation and film, writing the words or putting symbols or art to go with the words. It was done, the title came from the French poet whose name escapes me at the time, Jacques Villard, who was a poet in France in the 14th century, I believe, and he did a last will and testament. He was a street poet, a gambler, some think a murderer, and he disappeared, but he was a fine poet. Anyway, that is the background for the title. Some of the film was shot under camera, like my foot, and some of it was aided by a can of Budweiser. Pause. The next film is In the Penal Colony. It started many years ago. I started with the concept of trying to find a new way of putting film, doing film, or the content in film out. And I came up with the idea of filming my eyeball directly onto the film, and I would project all my great ideas through my eyeball onto the film. And if it worked, directly onto the film, and if it worked, it would solve the whole problem of filmmaking for a lot of people. Anyway, I set it up. Roy Bard shot it. We had a 400-foot magazine and set it up so I couldn't move my head. I could just peer directly into the screen, into the lens, camera lens, actually. I was going to use my right eyeball, but it got all red shortly before we were going to shoot. I think it was stage fright. So my left eye was substituted. I stared directly into the lens for 8-10 minutes. And later when the film came back, I noticed that it would slightly go in and out of focus. I think that may have been the period when I had a great ideas. It's very hard having great ideas on times like that, just immediately come up with a great idea or a thought and try to project it out your eyeball onto the film. When the film was shown the first time silent at a experimental film festival, the audience, a review said it was a true experimental film. Most of the audience got up and walked out before it was over. So I guess my theory or experiment, either it didn't hold, you couldn't project your great thoughts onto film, or else I had no great thoughts, The theory was right, but I had no great thoughts. So the film has then had an evolution. I had read Kafka's In the Penal Colony. I thought it was one of the coldest stories in the world, utterly cold. And I remember my wife told me, second wife, Yuta, told me that he had written an article, which I've been able to find. I saw it, but I can't find it, on that the eye is a perfect theatrical motion picture media, directly into the brain or the soul. If anybody can find that and send it to me, I'd love it. Anyway, so I decided to put the film and Kafka's In the Penal Colony together. It's somewhat of an abridged version. At the same time I was doing this, or contemplating it, was the Manson, early on at least, the Manson thing broke with Charlie Manson and his group. And there was this guy who appeared at UCLA. He had come down from Berkeley. Time magazine was paying him as a consultant on the Manson story. He told me some interesting stories. That's another tape. And he was also interested in film, and he had what he called the 28-frame brainwave theory. And that he felt that the 28 frames, some rhythm of cutting on 28 frames or repeat of 28 frames, was the closest to the alpha brainwave theory. At that time, the Beatles were thought to put that, it's a 1,000-cycle hum or sound wave, sound cycle, and it's supposed to make you feel good. And the Beatles had put it in their songs, that's why you like them, and so forth. But he was trying to put them into film, and he had done experimental work up at Berkeley with film. He was quite proud he'd been able to put 67% of his audience to sleep in 10 minutes using this technique. So anyway, I thought I'd try it with this. And it, so the eye itself is shot. I mean, it's live action for 28 frames. And then on an optical printer, it was frozen for 28 frames. So it goes back and forth. It's a very subtle rhythm in the film visually. It's just not a straight eyeball. I also use the 28-frame brainwave theory in the film Red Green on my voice. So that, as far as that film is, at present time, is the only film of mine that has not done well, and not even been shown in any film festivals accepted, and maybe it's the 28-frame brainwave theory. Oh, one thing that I want to mention on the eye film in the Penal Colony, when the eye was being shot, a student in the program had taken the animation class, a nice young lady, came in and just started chatting up. I mean, sitting there trying to do great thoughts on the film, and she just wanted to chat away. But she wanted to talk about, she'd been a speed freak and had gone to some sort of experimental withdrawal, how to kick the methadone habit. But she was the only speed freak there, and the rest people were heroin addicts, and how she had really come out the best of the whole group, and she felt quite proud of that, over the heroin addicts. And she was talking about her days as shooting up, and her favorite way to shoot up was to the underside of the tongue was put the needle there, and methadrine would go, that's where she'd shoot up. So that was a slight distraction as I was trying to kick across great ideas, the idea of having a needle in your tongue. Yeah. So Star Spangled Banner was a collage film, and it was a film I was trying to get on the Smothers Brothers network program at the time, but I think it was Tommy, I'm not sure, decided he wanted to be a filmmaker. Next film is No Idea. Bob Rosen came up with the title for this, and also Shapes of Movement. Bob's an old friend, now the dean at the School of Theater, Film, and Television at UCLA. It was a cartoon, one of a couple or two or three I did. I think it should be pretty explanatory. Traditional animation, cartoon animation, and it was done in a style I used for several Sesame Street spots early on. The Shapes of Movement is a film on the history of gymnastics. Burt Lancaster narrated it. It was supposed to be in the 84 Olympics, but I had a dispute, so to speak, with the producer, and the film was never made. But I kept the rights, and so I had taken the original material, and what I wanted to do with this film, since gymnastics is a spinning or circular motion, all motion in gymnastics is circular, and I had long wanted to try a new movement in film, to add a new movement to film editing. And we have, you know, vertical, horizontal, and Z-axis movement, X, Y, and Z movement in film are combinations. But we don't have a rotation movement, a spinning movement. That is really a way of editing, and, as I said, cutting and using in the language of a film. So this was an attempt to put the rotation movement in, where the whole screen would rotate, not only the object within the frame rotating, which we do have, newspapers, but I wanted to rotate the whole frame, and this is what I did here. I had done it for the whole film, and that was too much, so I used it to select points in the film. And this is where digital filmmaking did help, because I tried several times to shoot it in the crane, the spinning, and proved too much of a hardship, too much experimental, and too frustrating, really. So this it was an attempt, again, to add a new movement to the dialogue or a film. For those filmmakers who enter festivals, it was funny. I entered this as an animation film, about 10 festivals, and didn't get into one. I entered it as a documentary, and it started getting ones all right away. It hit. So the proper category is important. Though it did get in as a documentary and fun festival, and won Best Animation. So figure it out. I can't. And the only other thing about it is, Burt Lancaster did a marvelous job on the voice. He was a circus gymnast, and he was working out. He always worked out with the UCLA gym team, and the coach, Sherlock, of the gym team was able to ask him if he would do it for me, and he did. Marvelous voice, and I didn't direct him. I just told him, do it. You know, I'd ask him to do it nicely, and he did. Next film, Claude. I wanted to do a film with character animation and lip sync, three characters. So it would be my first cartoon, though I'd done a fire safety spot before with cartoon characters, but I wanted this with situation, character, lip sync. At the time, the UPA style was the dominant style. Disney was out. Disney was thought of as animation of being pretty, but it didn't say anything where UPA and the European work, and actually UCLA, their animation concentrating on content was the, it was it. Everybody wanted to do it. Disney people were very sad. They had done things like, they said, like shit like Bambi, and that's another story. Anyway, the Claude is James Cagney's sister, did the mother of Claude. Her husband taught at theater department at UCLA, And part of Claude, there's no cuts in it. Use the going into Claude's world and out as a transition, so he can move all around, dissolving the background from a room or a driveway, whatever, to his world, the gray world, where he's building his machine. So the film was hard to shoot. There were no cuts, and I had to shoot it from beginning to end without, couldn't make a mistake. So I guess that's about it. My films are almost always based on some critical or conceptual concern, finding answers to a concern of animation filmmaking, or trying to find something different to a new way of filmmaking. I always try something new to put across concepts, thoughts, emotions even, but open up new ways of seeing the world and thinking about the world and thinking. Open up new ways of thinking. I do minimalist work, conceptual, structural. That conceptual as an idea, working from an idea. Structural, dealing with the film structure techniques, and which often I try to come up, with a new form of content, using new techniques of the media to come up with a new form of content. Again, looking for other forms of content rather than the narrative. I respect the narrative, I love it, but quite frankly, I'm bored by it, and I do other ways, the forms of filmmaking. Always interested in the new, not repeating, and that's just the way my brain works.